Hello, this is Lonnie Stark of Stark Silver Creek, and I'm joined by Philip K. Howard today, a legal reform advocate in the United States. He's been a recent speaker on TED talking about the four ways to fix a broken legal system. He's also the founder of Common Good, an organization that's looking at legal reform in the U.S., and just recently authored a book, Life Without Lawyers. Thank you, Philip, for taking the time to chat with us.
Nice to be with you.
So let's start talking first about your presentation on TED. I thought it was sort of fascinating, some of the statistics that you brought into play. You mainly focused on healthcare, I think, was one big area, as well as the school system. How did you really start getting involved in looking at the legal system that we have in the U.S.?
Well, law is supposed to be a driver of human behavior, but it's supposed to protect our freedom, not be a substitute for freedom where, you know, life becomes a sort of like a multiple choice test where you can only do things the right way. You're supposed to be free to do things in many ways. And it's quite clear that in almost every area of social interaction, especially people who deal with the public like doctors and teachers, law, it's basically crushed them and makes it impossible for them to act sensibly all day long. So those just happen to be two important segments of society, but there are many others that are affected as well.
So many people may feel that the laws are confusing, but very few people found an organization called Common Good, write a book about it. So what is sort of driving the passion behind sort of taking on this cause?
Well, I've always been interested in public policy. When I was, starting when I was 18, I worked at the Oak Ridge National Lab as a sort of gopher for a Nobel Prize winner called Eugene Wigner, and ended up publishing a paper on post-nuclear war recovery. But my whole life I've been active in public policy, even though my day job is as a corporate lawyer at a big law firm, Covington & Burling. I work closely with Al Gore on his Reinventing Government program after my book, The Death of Common Sense, came out. And so I have this active second career looking at the effects of law on the functioning of society.
One thing you talked about in the TED speech was the four ways to really fix a broken legal system. I thought that the point you brought up, simplifying the laws, doing all those things, but I'm wondering, laws didn't start off so complex. There was a system in place or some incentives in place to get it to be so complex. I wasn't, you know, how do you think the process need to change? Because you can simplify today. Let's just say, you know, we get rid of all the laws and we simplify everything. But if incentives and the processes are still in place, we'll, you know, 50 years from now, find ourselves maybe in the same spot again.
Well, law always has to adjust or should adjust to meet the needs of the society. What's happened is that law is not adjusting. It's just piling up like sediment in the harbor. And there's so much law that's been piled up, especially over the last 50 years, that nobody can get anywhere sensible. Take the new health care bill. Universal health care is a goal I support. But they piled 2,000 pages of new law on top of 50,000 pages of old law. Well, that's not going to contain costs. You need to realign incentives so that everyone involved in health care, for example, patients have the responsibility to be prudent in their use of resources. That probably requires, for people who can afford it, co-pays, things like that. Doctors need to be responsible for not ordering excessive tests. And one of the things they need to do that is they need a system of justice they can trust so that every time a sick person gets sicker, you know, they're not allowed to sue for millions of dollars when the doctor didn't do anything wrong. So you need a system of law that will align incentives so that people will do the right thing. We're not doing that now. We just keep piling up law. We let anybody sue for anything. So the result is people have this sense when they wake up in the morning that they're go out on the sidewalk, it's a state of legal anarchy. And it's people don't feel free to do what's right. They feel like they constantly have to spend their energy protecting themselves. And it doesn't work.
So what I'm hearing from you is also this idea of looking at, periodically looking at what laws we don't need, or, you know, how do we get rid of the search sentiment? And I see this happen quite often, even just policies, anywhere. It's, why is that policy? Why do we do it this way? Well, you know, we enacted it a while ago, and no one ever bothered to get rid of it. So that's why.
Yeah, it's a terrible thing. I mean, Congress doesn't even have the idea of getting rid of old laws. Neither does the state legislature in Sacramento. That's the reason they're paralyzed. A couple of weeks ago, it came out that $5 billion in stimulus money that had been allocated 15 months ago to weatherproof 590,000 homes hadn't been spent because of a 1931 law signed by President Hoover that requires the federal government on contracts with federal money to set the wages in 3,000 different localities. So hundreds of bureaucrats for the last year have been setting the wages in Monmouth County, New Jersey, and Fresno, California, for weatherproofers. I mean, this makes central planning look efficient. It's a complete joke. There's no reason for this law other than the fact that unions like to get high wages, and so they like to keep it there. But it means that for a year, a whole season or more, we don't have 590,000 weatherproof homes, and we haven't spent the stimulus money. So government is filled, overflowing with requirements like that that make no sense.
I didn't share, at least in the TED Talk, and I realize this is a pretty short, abbreviated part of your concept, how we incentivize people to get rid of laws, or how come no one sort of stood up and said, why are we doing this? And you pointed to some of the parts of it, which is the union, et cetera, aren't incentivized that way. You being a lawyer, I mean, in some ways, people hire lawyers because the laws are so complex to navigate them. Who's incentivized to get rid of laws?
Well, that's the problem about where we are, which is that the special interest groups care desperately about keeping things the way they are. You know, it's not just unions. It can be corporations. It can be lots of, you know, every special interest group, including the lawyers. And there's nobody representing the common good. No one. And so all of America will be enormously better off if we cut the estimated $1 trillion in waste every year in healthcare. But that requires making changes and realigning incentives that take things away from a wide range of interest groups. And even though everyone will be better off. So unless we build a movement, which we're now trying to start, unless we build a movement to put pressure on Washington and Sacramento and other capitals to change, it's never going to change. They're never going to get rid of all these old laws.
It seems that a lot of them depends on the trust in others to take responsibility and have a certain level of common sense. Is that you think of underlying sort of belief that you have? And then secondly, do you think that Americans in general have that trust?
No, Americans don't trust anybody, and the worse things work, the more justified they are in the distrust. But what I'm proposing is not that you trust somebody to do the right thing, but that you give people the responsibility to do the right thing and then hold them accountable if they don't. A simple example, I'll give you two examples that need to change. A teacher. Teachers need to have the authority to maintain order in a classroom. If a student goes up in the teacher's face and tells her to go jump in a lake, the teacher ought to be able to say, you're out of here, and have the authority to do that, because if she doesn't have that authority, then pretty soon there's disorder throughout the classroom, and that's what's happened in America. And I gave the numbers on that. 43% of all high school teachers say they spend more time maintaining order than teaching. So that means that the kids in those classrooms get at most half the learning they're supposed to, because if one kid's misbehaving, nobody's learning. Everybody's, paying attention to that kid. So there's one. It doesn't mean all teachers will be fair, and if they're unfair, you can hold them accountable. but they have to be presumptively have to have that authority. Otherwise, nobody learns. The same thing is true with judges. Judges have to have the authority to act as gatekeepers. So there's this crazy case that was brought a couple of years ago in Washington, D.C., where this lawyer sued his dry cleaners for $54 million because they lost a pair of pants. The case went on for 2 years before the guy finally lost. He's still appealing it. That case could have lasted 5 minutes. The judge holds a hearing, and he says, maybe you have a claim in small claims court for $100 for your lost pair of pants, but not in a court of general jurisdiction for millions of dollars. Case dismissed without prejudice to refiling in small claims court. But the judge has to think he has that authority to do that. It doesn't mean that all judges will be fair. But if they're not fair and they write a written ruling, that can be appealed to another judge, you know, to an appellate court. And instead, we've created a system where we've tried to guarantee there's never, ever any unfairness. So teachers now have to prove every single decision. They have to go into a hearing if some parent wants to object to the fact that Johnny was kicked out of the class. Judges are told they're never allowed to use their common sense, that they're just supposed to act as neutral referees and let anybody argue anything. Well, that ends up undermining everybody's freedom, because what people sue for establishes, or can sue for, establishes the boundaries of everyone else's freedom. If somebody can sue because their kid fell off a seesaw, pretty soon all the seesaws will get ripped out. It doesn't matter what happens when the jury decides. What matters is that people know they might be at risk and the next jury might decide it a different way. So if you don't have judges actually applying social norms, limiting what people can sue for and, frankly, what they can defend too, you know, defenses they make, then everyone loses their freedom. So it's not a matter of trusting them. It's a question of letting them do their job and then holding them accountable if they do a lousy job.
What's been the feedback that you've had, especially, you know, are you surprised by any of the responses that you've gotten since the TED Talk or from, you know, folks that have read your book?
Well, the TED Talk is just fabulous. I mean, I live, you know, I'm all the way over here in New York, so this is, you know, the people who run the technology communities are not necessarily people I know. And the response has just been overwhelming. So I was at Google a couple of weeks ago giving a talk, and a bunch of people are now working with me to help build a movement using new media. Mm-hmm. Probably the movement would be based on the idea of individual responsibility as the litmus test for remaking and overhauling basically all or much of American law and statutes. And you go look at everything and you say, well, does this make any sense? And who has responsibility to make sense of this? And how are they going to be held accountable? Constantly asking that question. And if you do that, you could clean up 90% of the laws.
You bring up a good, interesting point around individual responsibility. And I think there's a focus on the legal system, but what does it mean for an individual? You brought up a couple stories. I've heard stories about someone, you know, driving their car into a lamppost and wondering, okay, why is that lamppost there? Or other sort of, you know, or that guy who spilled the hot coffee on their lap. Where do you think individual responsibility plays into this, and do you think the majority of Americans want that individual responsibility?
Well, I think clearly most Americans do want it. I mean, they understand what made our country great. It's people being free to pursue their own dream and being responsible if they you know, break the norms of society or if they don't do a good job. But not necessarily responsible by law just because there's a dispute in the workplace or a dispute in the school. Or because a sick person gets sicker. Law is supposed to be set outer boundaries. It's not supposed to be a compliance manual for freedom. That's the opposite of freedom. Freedom is freedom. Freedom is a dry ground of infinite choices and a place where humans can focus on their goal and getting there, not looking over their shoulders all day long. You know, today, freedom's like a minefield. People tiptoe through the day all day long. Well, this has to change, or we're just not going to be competitive, and it's not fulfilling. I mean, what makes people happy? It's being able to make a difference. It's being able to use their muscles and their instincts and their experience and to draw on their judgment, which is all these things reside in people's subconscious. You know, what legal fear does and too much law and fear of lawsuits is it drives people up into the thin veneer of conscious logic where they're just worrying about how to protect themselves. And there have been lots of studies on this, and it shows that people make worse judgments when they're self-conscious in this way. So it's very important. This is not a kind of a small issue. I mean, this is, it really goes to the heart of our culture.
You talked about healthcare schools in the TED Talk. What do you make of the whole financial fiasco that's happened in this nation? You hear about just increased financial compliance coming down the pipe, mm-hmm. just where, you know, the bailout dollars actually went. Where do you think that's all playing out? And it seems like in that situation, things are only going to get worse from a compliance legal perspective.
Well,
say ethics.
I mean, I think that the financial mess involves a couple of phenomena. One, there was a failure of a market. The mortgage market got to be too complex, the instruments were too complex, and the people in charge didn't understand them. They didn't understand what they were dealing with. The rating agencies were giving AAA ratings and stuff that should have been given, you know, C ratings. So one, there was a failure of a market, and it's very hard to, by regulation, to stop that. I mean, it's useful to try, in my view, but by and large, when you have a failure of a market, whatever regulatory structures are in place end up acting like a sort of Maginot line. You know, the market ends up evolving in a way that avoids the regulatory structure and fails in some way that no one anticipated. But, you know, there were a few lessons to learn, and I think regulation has an important role in society. For example, I don't think banks should be too big to fail. I mean, you can't allow institutions to take so much risk that if they make bad bets, they would bring down the entire economy. That's crazy. Why would you give someone that power? So there is a role, I think, for limiting the amount of risk that big institutions make so that we don't have to bail them out next time. I think a regulatory response is appropriate, but no one should go to bed thinking that we're going to create the perfect regulatory structure and we're going to avoid some other failure 20 years from now, because it's just in the nature of markets that they tend to take, and governments, that they take a life of their own.
Talking about people threatening to sue other people, and it's creating this whole society of fear of an overly complex legislative system. What do you think are other things that people can do as substitution for, you know, threatening to sue people?
Well, first of all, you know, if someone's unhappy with what's happened to them in the job or in the school or something, and they're not the best judge of what's fair or what's not. We all have our own interest at heart. When my kids are involved, I'm thinking only about it from the standpoint of the kids, not from the standpoint of how the overall school works. So you need to have a system where the people making the judgments are not people who are self-interested. And so if there's a conflict in the school, principals have to be able to tell a parent, I'm sorry you feel that way, but you're just not going to get what you want. That's the end of the discussion. The same thing in courts. When somebody feels aggrieved that they lost their job or didn't get a promotion or they had an accident, judges have to draw these lines and say, you know, these are just the breaks. you don't have a claim here. And so unless it's something that you can identify where somebody clearly did something wrong, you know, that was outside the norms of what most people consider to be reasonable, then there people should not be allowed to maintain a lawsuit. And unless we do that, then all of us lose our freedom. Unless judges, you know, make those judgments, then pretty soon the rest of us are tiptoeing through the day, and you've got a society where no one will put an arm around a crying child, because who wants to be accused of a, quote, inappropriate touching? Where there are warning labels on every stupid implement that you can imagine. My favorite, bags of peanuts that say, caution, this bag may contain peanuts. You know, it's a bag of peanuts. Or, this fishing lure. I love this one. The 5-inch fishing lure that says, the side harmful if swallowed. Baby strollers that say remove baby before a folding stroller. I mean, you can do stand-up comedy with this stuff.
Life Without Lawyers, what's the basis of this book that has just come out?
You know, Life Without Lawyers is my effort to describe what we need to do to a society so people can live their lives and pursue their goals without worrying about legal consequences. And so I have a chapter on risk, a chapter on schools, about the need to get rid of bureaucracy and due process in schools, a chapter on relations in the workplace and the importance of not having legal claims except for group-wide discrimination claims. So just because one person feels they're, quote, treated unfairly, you know, everybody who doesn't get a job thinks they've been treated unfairly. Since when should that be a legal claim? That's, you know, bringing a legal claim just means the person who has responsibility isn't free to exercise that responsibility. You know, that's what managers do. They make decisions all day long. That's their job. And it's a big world. If you don't get the promotion, you can quit and go someplace else. Well, that's kind of a basic truth about the way the American economy is supposed to work that's been lost. And so what happens? You get this crazy management structure where people are no longer honest with each other. You know, where I get a list of questions that I'm not allowed, supposedly, to ask during interviews. Like, I'm not supposed to ask anybody, for example, where are you from? Because I could say that in a way, I suppose, that sounds kind of, you know, suspicious of people from foreign places. But you can also say it in a way that's perfectly normal, and it's part of regular human discourse because you want to know about somebody. You can't take away everybody's freedom. So that's what the book is about, and it's gotten, you know, it's wonderful, actually, the kind of response I've gotten to it, and some wonderful reviews, and people are reading it, and it's really the basis for this movement we're talking about.
It sounds like this book is really the answer to, you know, previously talking about our legal system being too complex, and this is your answer of what it could be, or what are the alternatives to having this complex legal system.
Yeah, that's right, and the subtitle is Restoring Responsibility to America. It's about the idea of giving people back the freedom to take responsibility. And we have a number of concrete projects in the works. I mean, our idea to solve the medical malpractice problem, which is to create special health courts, now enjoys the support of virtually everybody in healthcare, including the largest consumer groups. And President Obama recently stated that he's for doing pilot projects for it. So, you know, slowly but surely, we're kind of breaking, at least making some headway into the this sort of horrible blob called modern government. But fundamentally, and I say this in the book, none of these changes will occur unless the American public organizes itself into a movement based on individual responsibility that demands a spring cleaning of the regulatory and legal system so that people can take responsibility again.
One last question about, you were mentioning international competitiveness in your speech, and especially environmental protection policies. Along that line, do you think there's something cultural that has caused us to get to this point, or do you think other countries are following along, they're just further back in creating these overly complex systems and will eventually get to a point that we are at as well?
You know, we'll all sort of drown together in too much regulation and law. Well, America is clearly the worst. I mean, no other country has our lawsuit fear problem. It's just unique to America. Certain other countries have too much bureaucracy. The EU, for example, is getting too much bureaucracy. But even there, most European countries have at least semi-effective government authority structures where people can actually make decisions and build power lines and build nuclear power plants and build high-speed rail and such. In our country, there's so much process, environmental reviews have become an exercise of no pebble left unturned, that it'd literally be the year 2020 before any project Obama wanted could put a shovel in the ground, long after he's out of office. So we're really worse than others, and it is hampering our competitiveness. It's not hampering it so much, for example, in technology areas, because those aren't as regulated, but it's driving up costs in healthcare. It's driving down the level of our education. I mean, you know, what we're doing to our young people is just terrible. We're going to ask them to compete with kids from India and China and Germany, and we're sending them to schools where there's disorder all day long, and it's just terrible. So, you know, we don't allow them to go out and play and learn how to take responsibility for themselves and out in the woods or in playgrounds. Mm-hmm. We're not doing our children a service by having them grow up in this crazy environment where nobody does what they think is right.
Sure, and it probably breeds that culture as well, starting off when they're young. I want to thank you for the time you've taken to spend it with us chatting about your TED speech as well as the movement, the Common Good movement, which people can find out more information on from commongood.org, right?
Right, commongood.org. So that would be great. And people can sign up. It's free. We're actively pursuing, you know, supporters in lots of different communities. So anybody who wants to get involved will, this is only going to happen because people do get involved.
Thank you for your time.
Great. Nice to be with you.
We've been talking to Philip K. Howard, a leading legal reform advocate in the United States, about what we need to do to make our laws simpler and to really be able to restore responsibility in America.